Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into Levy Placer Title Co., a 1994 case. And it's really essential stuff if you're interested in property law, especially commercial leases.
Absolutely. It hits on two really key areas: how commercial leases can fundamentally change the usual tenant protections, and just as importantly, why getting court procedures right is so critical.
Yeah, it's almost like a masterclass in reading lease fine print and avoiding procedural traps. So let's set the scene.
Okay. So back in 1983, you have the landlords, Philip and Judy Lee, leasing space in a shopping center to Placer Title Company.
Standard commercial lease. Then, 1989, they extend it for another 5 years. Everything seems fine.
Right. Until June 1990, Placer Title suddenly moves out, stops paying rent altogether.
And their reason.
They claimed these unbearable fumes were coming from an adjacent dry cleaner, making the space unusable. They argue this amounted to constructive eviction.
The constructive eviction defense. Basically saying you made it impossible for us to stay, so we don't owe you rent.
Precisely. But the Lees disagreed, naturally. They sued Placer Title for the unpaid rent, which added up to over $120,000.
So tenant claims constructive eviction, landlord sued for the money. What happened next?
Well, Placer Title formally used constructive eviction as their defense against the rent claim. They also, interestingly, filed their own lawsuit initially, a cross-complaint, but they later settled that part and dismissed it with prejudice.
Okay. With prejudice is a key procedural point, right? It means they can't bring that specific claim again later.
Exactly. It locks the door on that particular avenue. But the defense of constructive eviction against a landlord suit was still technically on the table.
Until the landlords made a pre-trial move.
Yes. Before they even got to a full trial on the rent, the Lees filed a motion asking the court to basically block Placer Title from even using the constructive eviction defense.
On what grounds?
They pointed to specific language in the lease agreement itself. They argued the lease terms explicitly prevented the tenant from terminating the lease or withholding rent based on the landlord's default.
And the trial court?
The trial court agreed with the landlords. They looked at the lease and said, yep, based on this language, Placer Title waived its right to use constructive eviction as a reason to stop paying rent.
Wow. So that defense was just knocked out before trial.
Pretty much. This ruling was huge because it essentially gutted Placer Title's main defense. And it led directly to a stipulated judgment.
Okay, explain stipulated judgment again.
It means both sides agreed to the final judgment amount in this case, about $138,000 plus costs and attorney's fees for the landlords. However,
yes, there's always a however.
Right. Placer Title smartly agreed to the judgment while preserving their right to appeal the court's pre-trial ruling about the constructive eviction defense. So they said, okay, we'll agree to this amount if the ruling on our defense stands, but we want to fight that ruling on appeal.
Clever. So they limit their losses but keep the core legal issue alive.
Precisely. But before we get to the appeal, there was another procedural wrinkle. A pretty significant one, actually.
Oh, what was that?
Earlier in the case, back in July 1992, the trial court had actually dismissed the whole lawsuit.
Dismissed it? Why?
Because the landlords apparently failed to show up for a scheduled hearing.
Wait, so the case was dead for a bit?
For a few weeks, yeah. It looks like Placer Title might have gotten off the hook entirely, but then the case was reinstated.
Okay, how? And why does this matter? It sounds confusing.
It matters a lot because it goes to the court's fundamental authority, its jurisdiction. The reason the dismissal didn't stick was because the court clerk had mailed the notice for that crucial hearing to the landlord's old address.
The wrong address problem.
Exactly. Under California Code of Civil Procedure, Section 1013A, proper service by mail is strict. You have to send it to the party's correct current address on file with the court.
So sending it to the old address meant the notice wasn't legally valid.
Correct. It was defective service. Because the landlords never received legally proper notice of the hearing, the court's order dismissing the case was considered void like it never happened legally.
So even though the dismissal order was issued, it had no legal force because the procedure wasn't followed correctly.
That's the key. Which meant the trial court did still have jurisdiction, its fundamental authority, to later reinstate the case and eventually enter that stipulated judgment against Placer Title. This whole notice issue became a central point in the appeal.
Okay, so when it goes up on appeal, the court is looking at two big things. First, was that final judgment valid given the whole dismissal notice mess? Did the trial court actually have jurisdiction?
Right, that's issue number one, jurisdiction and defective service.
And second, did the trial court get it right when it said the lease language barred the constructive eviction defense?
Exactly. Issue number two, lease terms versus constructive eviction. Let's tackle jurisdiction first.
Okay, so the basic rule is if you don't properly notify someone about a court action, the court might not have the power to act against them.
That's the essence of due process. Proper notice is fundamental. If a required notice, like the notice of that dismissal hearing, isn't properly served according to the rules,
like sending it to the wrong address,
then any resulting order, like that dismissal, can be deemed void for lack of jurisdiction. The court simply didn't have the authority to make that order without proper notice.
So applying that here, wrong address means defective notice. Defective notice means the dismissal order was void.
Correct. And because the dismissal was void, it didn't legally terminate the case. The trial court retained its underlying jurisdiction,
which allowed it to later reinstate the case and enter the final judgment.
Precisely. The appellate court confirmed that because the service under CCP 113A was defective, the dismissal order was void, and the trial court acted within its authority when it eventually entered the judgment. Procedural details matter.
Definitely a lesson there. Okay, now on to the juicy part. The lease itself. What was that killer clause the landlords relied on?
The critical sentence read, "In no event shall tenant have the right to terminate this lease as a result of landlord's default, and tenant's remedies shall be limited to damages and door and injunction."
Okay, that sounds pretty clear. It basically says, tenant, if we mess up, you can sue us for money or get a court order making us fix it, but you cannot just walk away from the lease.
That's exactly how the landlords interpreted it and how the trial court read it too.
But how does that square with the whole idea of constructive eviction? Isn't that a situation where the landlord's default does let the tenant terminate?
Usually, yes. Constructive eviction is a common law doctrine, often tied to the implied covenant of quiet enjoyment, codified in California Civil Code Section 1927. It basically says the tenant has a right to possess the property peacefully, and if the landlord breaches that, making it unusable, the tenant can leave.
So you have this common law right, maybe even a statutory implication, versus this very explicit lease term. How does the law resolve that conflict?
This is where another part of the Civil Code becomes crucial. Section 3268, it essentially states that while certain rights are fundamental, parties to a commercial lease can generally waive or modify many statutory rights through their contract.
The commercial versus residential distinction again.
Exactly. Section 32668 allows for freedom of contract in commercial settings, letting businesses negotiate terms that might differ from standard legal protections, unless doing so would be unconscionable or violate public policy.
And the court decided this waiver, giving up the right to terminate for constructive eviction, wasn't unconscionable in this context.
Correct. The appellate court looked at it and said, this was a commercial lease between two businesses. Placer Title wasn't an inexperienced individual being taken advantage of. They're presumed to understand contract terms. There was no evidence this clause was hidden or unfairly imposed.
So in a commercial deal, you can bargain away the right to terminate even if the place becomes uninhabitable due to the landlord's fault.
According to this case, yes, if the lease language is clear and the circumstances aren't unconscionable. The court basically said Placer Title's remedy, according to the contract they signed, was limited to suing for damages like relocation costs, maybe lost profits, or seeking an injunction to force the landlords to fix the fume problem, not terminating the lease and walking away from rent payments.
That highlights a major difference. In a residential lease, it would be much harder, likely impossible, for a landlord to enforce a clause like that.
Absolutely. Public policy provides much stronger protections for residential tenants because housing is seen as a basic necessity and the bargaining power is often unequal. Commercial leases operate under a different set of assumptions about sophistication and negotiation.
Okay, so let's distill the big takeaways here, especially for law students listening. What are the core lessons from Levy Placer Title?
I'd say two main things really stand out. First, commercial lease terms are king. This case drives home that the specific language negotiated and agreed upon in a commercial lease can, and often does, override general common law principles or statutory rights, like the remedy for constructive eviction. You must read and understand every clause.
So lesson one, the contract rules in commercial settings, assuming it's clearly written and not unconscionable. What's lesson two?
Lesson two, procedure is paramount. Seriously. Don't ever underestimate the importance of following court rules, especially for things like serving notices. A simple mistake, like using an old address, can have massive jurisdictional consequences, potentially invalidating court orders.
It shows how a case can turn not just on the substance of the law, the lease terms, but on the mechanics of how the lawsuit is handled.
Exactly. You need to understand both. Knowing the substantive law about leases is great, but if you mess up the service of process rules, your case could be dead in the water. Or, like here, an order you thought was final could be deemed void. Always, always double-check addresses and follow the procedural codes meticulously.
So for students, this is a perfect example of substantive law, contracts, property, and procedural law intersecting with real-world consequences.
Couldn't say it better. It shows why both parts of your legal education are vital. You need to draft and interpret the contract correctly, and you need to know how to navigate the court system properly.
All right, so Levy Placer Title Co. really hammers home the power of the written agreement in commercial deals and the absolute need for procedural precision.
Definitely. And maybe a final thought to chew on. Given this freedom of contract in commercial leases, what are the ethical lines for lawyers drafting these agreements? When does negotiating away a tenant's remedies cross from smart lawyering into something potentially problematic, even if it's technically allowed? Something to consider as you move forward.
A very important consideration indeed. Thanks for digging into this with us. We hope this deep dive into Levy Placer Title Co. gives you valuable insight into commercial leases and civil procedure. Join us next time on The Deep Dive.